Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Varsha.
And today on the pod, we are going to be tackling two very different subjects, but both very rage-inducing. As always, I feel like I start every show by saying, hi, I'm going to fill you with rage for the next 45 minutes. Thank you for listening to my TED Talk. So first, we're going to talk about HHS's new Title X family planning funding rule.
Yeah.
Say that 10 times fast. It is a hot fucking mess, and there's a lot to go into there. And then we're going to have a reaction about the Michael Cohen testimony to the House Oversight Committee that happened yesterday. And honestly, it just devolved into people yelling at each other, which it always does, but I'm always, you know. But so that's going to be super interesting. So we've got really a lot to get to. But before we start, Varsha, how has your week been?
It was good. I got a lot of work done. And then I also just got to like sleep a lot. It was a very like relaxed weekend. And then like Sunday night, it wasn't Sunday night. It was like a couple nights ago. The stupid Cohen testimony like leaked basically, right? The night before, so the day before yesterday, it leaked at night, and I was just like spending all night reading that. I was like, what the fuck is gonna happen? And then the next day, it all happened.
Also, I have a question, and this, I don't know if you know the answer to this or if anybody does, but do we mean leaked as in like in quotations it leaked, or like leaked as in like it really wasn't supposed to get out?
No, the first one. I think it was supposed to be out. I think that was okay that was out. I think that happens often.
I just feel like we talk about like leaks, and sometimes it's like an actual leak, and sometimes it's like it's a leak. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
Nudge, nudge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm with you. I'm with you there too. It's been completely nuts. But like I said, packed show. So let's jump right in.
Okay, Devin, what is the bullshit with HHS today?
Well, there is actually a lot of bullshit going on with HHS. And there is a whole thing about former director of the Office of Refugee Resettlement, Scott Lloyd, and what has been going on with separation at the border. And that is a topic that we will be covering probably next week. But this week, what I want to talk about is something that happened, I believe, yesterday, that there is a new official rule by HHS regarding the Title X program, which is the family planning funding program. So basically, this is a program run by the HHS that supports low-income Americans with family planning services. And just for a little bit of context here, there's about 4 million patients being served by this program, and about 40% of those patients go to Planned Parenthood, and that's going to be central to our conversation this morning. So I think that we have to remember that when we're talking about Title X, you can't really talk about it without really fitting Planned Parenthood into it in that same breath, because honestly, 40% of this program is serviced by Planned Parenthood. So any sort of attack on Title X funding and Title X program changes is really directed like squarely at Planned Parenthood.
Yeah. And when you look at the key elements of the final rule, and this is from HHS, they say it like out loud. They're not even trying to hide it. They basically say that the key elements of it are, first, requiring clear and financial physical separation between Title X funded projects and programs where facilities where abortion is a method of family planning. That is basically Planned Parenthood, because Planned Parenthood does refer patients if they want to get an abortion.
Yeah, well, Planned Parenthood does technically provide abortions. They do not use any Title X or other federal funding to subsidize or give abortions to people who need them or want them. And it is a separate thing altogether. And so what a lot of this is saying is the kind of like the starting here was that people were, and by people, I mean Republicans, were worried about, like, I think the quote was improper commingling of financial, like, of financials. So basically, oh, maybe some Title X funding is being used to, like, cover abortions. And to that, I mean, just right off the bat, before we even go more into detail with this, which I will in a second, like, that seems like the job of like a good auditor, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if you're really fucking worried about it, fucking audit them. Like a normal person. This is America. It's like the governmental equivalent of like just sue them. You know, like if you're fucking worried about it, audit them. But anyway, so what they are basically saying is they're saying this is right off the HHS website, and this is the summary. And the first bullet point is, quote, prohibits the use of Title X funds to perform, promote, refer for, or support abortion as a method of family planning. And while this is important, because while Title X funding has never been allowed to be used to perform abortions, now they're saying you can't refer people for abortions. You can't support anything that has the word abortion in it, basically.
Basically, it's a domestic gag rule. Basically, you can't even think the word abortion. If you think the word abortion and you're a doctor who works at Planned Parenthood and that Planned Parenthood takes Title X funding, then you are making a mistake, which is, that's bullshit. That's bullshit.
Right. It also talks about something called non-directive counseling. So it permits but no longer requires non-directive pregnancy counseling, which basically means you don't encourage nor deter a person from any one method of family planning, whether that's abortion or birth control or any of that. And again, I find it super, super interesting. And I'm using interesting sort of sarcastically here, but I find it interesting that, you know, we have these rules and these laws on the books talking about something like non-directive pregnancy counseling. Would we talk about what a doctor and a patient talks about in any other circumstance? Like how you talk to your doctor?
No, it's called doctor-patient confidentiality. It's a real thing.
Exactly. It's like, first of all, so let's say that a doctor in some dystopian future, aka Handmaid's Tale, was not even allowed to say the word abortion. I have questions on how you're supposed to enforce that, because theoretically, any conversation between the patient and the doctor are so confidential that it can't even be, that confidentiality isn't even broken by death. Like, it has to be specifically waived. I mean, this is like the utmost kind of sacred confidentiality that we have in this country, along with lawyer and client and even clergy and parishioner in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have these things in place. And so to even put something like that in a document like this is so, it just gives away the game. It's so fucking obvious that this isn't about healthcare or family planning or supporting, you know, people who can get pregnant and their families, but rather a control, a bodily control. So, I mean, I think that really, and there's a few other things on here that I think are super interesting, again, sarcastically, to talk about. Yeah, so they prohibit referral for abortion as a method of family planning. And it also, this is another little one that I feel like this slips under the radar a lot. Quote, requiring clinics to encourage meaningful parent-child communication and, as required by federal law, to encourage family participation, especially in a minor's decision to seek family planning services and to provide practical ways to begin and maintain such communications. So they're not just getting in there to fuck around with, you know, pregnant people's rights, but now they're saying, oh, well, we want parents to be involved in their children. This is basically another way of trying to get abstinence only education and sexual education.
Because basically in certain states you can be underage. You could be like 16 or something and go to a Planned Parenthood or and get birth control, or you can go to a Planned Parenthood and get an abortion. And like, there are certain states where you don't have to tell your parents. Right? Which makes sense. And I think it makes sense because when you go to a Planned Parenthood, they talk you through all of the options. They're professionals because, again, they're fucking doctors, right? If you go to any sort of clinic and you're underage and it's a state that allows you to not have to tell your parents because, again, that makes sense as a law, that you don't have to share your confidential information with your parents depending on the age that you are, then that should be respected. But what this is saying is, oh, we're going to start like violating that basically. Like basically if certain states have that law, fuck states' rights. That's what they're saying.
Right. Which Republicans love states' rights so much, except when it comes to, you know, the bodily autonomy of women and femmes and, you know, people that aren't straight white men. And the other thing here, so for me, and this isn't necessarily any sort of legal argument or here, but I feel like if a minor has the wherewithal and the knowledge and the drive to get themselves without a parent to these clinics, to these services, there's probably a reason for it.
Yeah.
And to then say, oh, no, we can't serve you. And again, this is where it kind of, we were talking about this a little bit last week, where a lot of times children's rights and minors' rights mm-hmm. are kind of a hazy part of politics.
Yep.
Because they don't vote and they aren't directly served by politicians, and that there's this sort of weird liminal space that, especially once you hit like those late teens where you're technically not an adult and you're technically still under, you know, your parents' supervision, mm-hmm. but you're very much autonomous in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is like, how far does medical privacy extend?
Yeah.
Because, you know, and again, if we take the emotional parts out of it, if we don't talk about family planning, what if we talk about, you know, other aspects of medical care? Mm-hmm. Like, are minors required to have their parents in on every conversation about everything? I mean, like, I just feel like it's a pretty mushy area to start with. And then to add something like this in to like specifically talk about re-involving parents in minors' actions.
Yeah.
It really starts to fall apart for me. Again, it has a lot more to do with control than with support.
Yeah. I feel like it's just a risk when you have, like, for example, if you go to a clinic that offers counseling and you're a minor, like technically with this rule, depending on what like this teenager and or this doctor or whatever is saying to this child, like that is like reportable to the fucking state if they right. talk about like sex or abortions or family planning or birth control. Like that's it's so dystopian. It's like really creepy. Like I can't even wrap my head around how weird that is, because one, I know it would take a lot for like that type of reporting to actually get all the way back up to HHS, because we don't know how doctors on the ground are going to react to this. I'm assuming they don't like this, right?
Right.
But even let's say HHS or the government or whatever finds a way to make this reportable, that seems even worse. Right? Because not only do you risk Title X funding because this is all reportable and you can see it all and whatever, you're also like really risking the quality of care for people, not just minors, but women in general, right? Like on the off chance that like a Planned Parenthood is treating someone and they decide, oh God, we got to report this now or whatever, or they're audited or whatever, or something, and you have to like report the fact that the doctor said the word abortion or the patient said that she wanted an abortion and decided to go do this and got resources from Planned Parenthood to do this, like a fucking flyer or whatever, that risks their future Title X funding, and it risks all funding.
Right. Well, and I think that's actually a really good point, because again, when we're talking about family planning, specifically abortions, it gets so emotional and people get so wrapped up in like their views on abortion. But again, you could sub in anything. Like if a child goes to, or a minor goes to therapy or counseling, are their parents entitled to talk to their psychiatrist or therapist? And does their therapist have to tell them what their kids said? Obviously, there's like reporting statutes, and like there are some things that are, even as an adult, that are required by law to be reported. Mm-hmm. But I mean, outside of those situations, like there are medical privacy laws in place here. Yeah. And we kind of got in the weeds here talking about minors, but which is not really what I wanted to talk about necessarily. But I do think it speaks to the larger underlying understanding of this Title X program, is that it's not about support. It's about control.
Exactly.
It's not about providing services. It's about restricting access to services based on some moral ideology of who.
Yeah. And especially because these services, these ideas or whatever, they're not supported by the government, because the Trump administration has already cut funding for birth control when it comes to getting birth control from like whatever, right? Or even like getting birth control from your employer's insurance. They've cut funding that way. This is not just about like that. It's about like saying, even if you have the means to get an abortion by going to Planned Parenthood and figuring out which abortion clinic to go to, right? Or whatever, that isn't even allowed to you. Like no matter who you are, especially if you're low income, that isn't allowed to be, right? And so who this is
that was
hurting.
The next this was my next point is like this is a program that services low income Americans and specifically low income women. And so who and again I say this all the time when I'm talking about abortion with my friends or people or debating it, I'm always like, yeah, I as a rich white woman am always going to have access to abortion, always. I'm not worried about me.
Like me as a middle-class person living in California with health insurance, I'm going to be able to get an abortion if I so feel like it, right? I'm going to be able to get access to healthcare. To birth control, right? It might be a teeny bit harder because I'm like a middle class or working class. It might be a little bit harder, but it's still going to happen. But what Title X funding, what Title X funding specifically is for low-income women who do not have access to that. Right. That is the goal of Planned Parenthood, is to literally serve women and non-binary folk and trans people who don't have access to other clinics in the area. Right. That's what their goal is.
And the thing is like this is the idea of getting around Roe v. Wade without repealing Roe v. Wade itself. Because and again, when I say I will always have access to abortion, I mean, even if abortion is illegal, even if Roe v. Wade goes kaput, like there will always be a class of women who will have access to these sort of procedures, you know? And so it's not about, and again, this is why it becomes about control.
Yeah.
Because the whole point of the patriarchy and this white supremacy that we live in is that it allows white, like upper class, rich white women to taste some of the power of the patriarchy by making it so that the system, while it fucks over other people, they really don't feel the effects of it. And so something like Title X fund, and so the real threat to this current system of white supremacy patriarchy is, I think, when you, if you were to ask and got an honest answer from somebody, from, you know, like a rich white guy who benefits from it, I think the biggest threat they see are other rich white people, specifically rich white women, who are like, whoa, 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 hold the fucking phone. Because they actually have the ability to blow it up from the inside out.
Yeah.
Right? And they it's in their vested interest to keep people on their side.
Yeah.
And so these type of programs, again, it's this idea. Am I making sense, Varsha?
Yeah,
I just sound
you
ridiculous?
Are. You're basically saying that the way that the patriarchy works is, especially white supremacy and the patriarchy, is that they find other people to ally with. That technically these classes of people shouldn't be aligning with them, but they do. Because this is historically true. When you look at the feminist movement, the backlash of the feminist movement came from women. Not just men, right? There were white women who said, no, I don't want this type of, I don't want an equal rights amendment. Because if I got an equal rights amendment, what you're saying is I'm being belittled by society or whatever the fuck, right? And that's just a bullshit argument. But they make it, they say this because they think that feminism threatens their way of life, right? So it threatens a certain class of women's way of life, right? And so when it comes to this Title X funding specifically, the reason that certain white women, specifically conservative white women, are allied with this is because, one, they have like religious beliefs, which I can't really like, I can't question completely, but I do question this idea that, you know, religiously, I think it's murder or whatever the hell. But
Religion is also a patriarchy, so let's not forget that.
Yeah, let's just like not forget the fact that like Christianity is super patriarchal. Like just especially evangelical Christianity. Let's just not forget that. I don't mean to criticize that or individual people's relationship, but like that's how it works in the United States, is that men, specifically religious men, get to tell the people that follow them exactly what to believe. And there is individual thought in this, because you do see that like if you look at the actual numbers, the numbers of like religious white women getting abortions is actually higher. Like it's historically, there's a huge number of like Catholic and religious women who get abortions, right? And so it's not that like women of a certain class who maybe support this Title X ruling don't believe that they should have access to birth control or they should have access to an abortion. It's more that they concede to white men and the patriarchy and to white supremacy that, oh, low-income people and people of color, fuck those people. Right? That's how the system works, right? That the system works because you have people like Ivanka Trump and you have people like Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, right? Even though they say they're pro-choice, they get to vote for people like Kavanaugh. They know that that choice of voting for Kavanaugh doesn't affect them, because on the off chance that Susan Collins' daughter or granddaughter, whatever the fuck, wants to get birth control or terminate her pregnancy, that's going to be totally possible for her.
Right, right. Exactly. That's, you put it perfectly. You said exactly what I was trying to say, but better, which is why we keep you around. No, just kidding. but no, that's exactly right. Yeah. And again, this also goes back to Trump, the Trump administration dismantling trans rights and the trans service member ban. And again, it's about, yes, that group specifically, but it's also because it's like, I bring this up every fucking show. First, I literally want to tattoo this on my forehead, but that quote from the New York Times article, he's not hurting the right people, because that's the whole point. Like, it's always going to come up to you, but you have to start at the bottom and work your way up. Mm-hmm. And so these type of rules are about starting at the bottom and dismantling and doing it almost subtly, right? Almost under the radar, almost in a way that you don't feel it, you know, like the international gag rule. No one even talks about it anymore, because it's one of those things that gets switched on and off based on who's the president.
Yep.
And, you know, like, we just kind of expect it. But so now there's a domestic gag rule.
Basically, that's basically what this is. Yeah.
But we've been trained to accept that because there's an international gag rule about abortion.
And
so domestic gag rule makes sense too, right?
Yeah. But also, we've been trained, and I really want to get out from this, because, like, there are men, liberal women, whatever, who've been trained to accept the fact that, like, the Hyde Amendment is okay. And I'm like, you know what? It's not okay. It is not okay to say that abortion procedures or whatever, any type of health care that is necessary for women or people who identify as women or people who have uteruses or don't have uteruses, whatever, that any type of health care is subpar from another type of health care, right? This idea that an abortion procedure is like fucking getting your tummy tucked or something. That's not how it works. That's not okay. Right. Because it leaks into other aspects of this. So, like, you've probably heard this, right? This idea that Walgreens, pharmacists at Walgreens and other places, other pharmacies as well, certain pharmacists have this, like, right to deny a prescription based on their moral idea. And so, like, there are stories after stories after stories of women who have a miscarriage and they need medication to make sure that miscarriage goes through properly so they don't get fucking infected and die. And that medication is also similar to, like, a medical abortion medication, right? Or that's what it could be used for. And so there are cases where, like, pharmacists will be like, I'm not going to fill this prescription out. And that's unacceptable. Right? It is unacceptable, because you wouldn't tell, like, this is a really weird example, but this is a great example. So, like, in Grey's Anatomy, there's an episode in, like, one of the earlier seasons, right, where Bailey, an African-American doctor, has to, like, perform surgery on this guy. And this white guy doesn't want her to perform surgery. And initially, she thinks it's because she's a woman. But then it finds out because she's black and he's a fucking Nazi. But you know what she does? And this is, like, her own thing, because she's allowed to, like, say, no, I can pass this on to another doctor because there are other doctors there. She performs fucking surgery on him and she ruins his Nazi tattoo. Fuck yeah. Right. But what I mean is that, like, every single person, no matter how heinous or how amazing, deserves medical care. Right. And so it really sucks. And it's not, it's changing, but, like, you know, everyone's talking about Medicare for All, right? Initially, Medicare for All, it was like an afterthought about what was going to happen to the Hyde Amendment, right? When I started researching for you, right? I started researching for you in September of 2017. And that's when everyone was releasing their Medicare for All bills, especially Sanders. And the Hyde Amendment thing was an afterthought. It was literally added in a couple days later. And I understand that it is an afterthought, because we have conditioned ourselves to believe that abortion care or women's health care or birth control, whatever, is second status to other types of health care. But it's not. Right. And it's the same thing as
Johnny Gandy always says, abortion care is healthcare. Mm-hmm. And we don't make that connection in our brains.
Yeah, we don't, because the way we talk about abortion is as if it is, we have conceded to the right, to the right wing, that abortion is this really, really difficult and, like, you know, incredibly hard choice. And it is, but that doesn't mean it's also not healthcare. That doesn't mean right. that, like, a person who, let's say she finds out that she's pregnant and this fetus in her is going to, like, live a horrible, really quick life and is going to pass away, right? Yes, that is a hard choice for that woman, but it is also, like, the right healthcare choice for that person, right?
It's also her choice to make. Exactly. And I think that is so important. People are allowed to deny, if they don't want to have a life-saving surgery, they don't have to have it. Yeah. There's no way to compel them to do it. You get to make choices about every other aspect of your healthcare, except for this one. And the only reason is because there's been a false morality attached to it. And I love the way that you put it. We've been conditioned this way. We've conceded to the religious right and the right wing of politics, because really, you know, I remember when we were talking about this probably a year or more ago, and I think I was the one, I had said something like, you know, Bill Clinton's famous abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. Mm-hmm. And I got an email from a listener who was like, yeah, no, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
To say that, or to say that this will be the hardest decision that a woman will ever make in her life is just more propaganda. It's like any other healthcare decision. And you know what? It's not always a hard choice.
It isn't.
It's sometimes a really fucking easy choice. And to set it up to be something that, like, is something that you have to, like, live through, and this is something I have to endure now, when in reality, it's like any other healthcare choice. It's like any other thing that you deal with privately with yourself, your doctor, and maybe your family if you want to involve them. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's the whole game. And I have such a hard time, you know, when people start talking about, like, oh, but, like, when does life really begin? And I'm like, first of all, now we're getting into philosophy, and I don't have time for that. Boring white person. Thank you. Boring white man. But I mean, honestly, we have a couple of medical answers, but the real answer is it's none of your goddamn business.
It isn't.
Unless the fetus is in your body.
Yeah. It's the doctor's business and your business in terms of, like, you figuring out exactly what is your choice, right? So, like, when it comes to like abortion statistics, right? We talk about how abortions are performed at very early in the pregnancy. No one fucking performs
so early.
An abortion. Very few people perform abortions or get abortions in the second trimester. And basically no one really gets an abortion in the third trimester. It's always in the fucking first trimester, because depending on where you are in the socioeconomic class, you know if you're pregnant early enough, right?
Right.
And also depending on your life status, right? Like, you know, if I want to have a child or if I don't. And if someone is getting an abortion in the late trimester or in the third trimester, it's probably because it fucking is damage to their child.
There's something
or
wrong.
To their mom. Yeah, wrong. There's something wrong.
Right.
Right. So there was a great, like, again, I get all of my medical knowledge from medical shows, but there's a great episode of Grey's Anatomy, like a long time ago, where one of the doctors, in the first season, Christina Yang wants to get an abortion, right? Because she's like she's finding out she's pregnant and she doesn't want to tell the dad. And her friend Meredith is like, no, you should tell the dad. And Christina's like, why the fuck should I tell the dad? It was like, we're not even dating. Like, I don't need to tell him. Like, why do I need to tell him? Right. It's my body, my choice. And, like, that's amazing. And also the best thing about this show is everyone who watches Grey's Anatomy, like, they talk about their friends as if, oh, you're my person, right? But that you're my person thing comes from Christina telling Meredith, I put you down as my emergency contact person. You're my person. And, like, that's where it comes from. It's like the fucking feminist awesomeness. I just wanted to put that in there.
This is now a Grey's Anatomy fan podcast.
Yeah, basically. Basically. I'm sorry.
no, it's so cute. Well, no. And so I also want to point to a related case when talking about Health and Human Services specifically. And it's a case from 1991. It's a Supreme Court case from 1991, Rust v. Sullivan. So basically, it was about the Title X Family Planning Services, and HHS issued regulations that had limited the ability of Title X fund recipients, so these providers, to engage in abortion-related activities. Mm-hmm. So basically, that was the original ban on Title X funding for abortions. And so the question was, does this violate the First and Fifth Amendment rights of clients and health providers? That was the question pitched to the court, mm-hmm. to the courts. And the conclusion was no. It was a 5-4. So basically they said that the intent of Title X is ambiguous with regard to abortion counseling. And so the court will defer to the expertise of the administrative agency of HHS. So again, this sort of goes back to what we were talking about being conditioned, mm-hmm. right? We've been conditioned that the Hyde Amendment is fine. We've been conditioned that this sort of restriction in how funds are being used is fine. We've been conditioned to understand that an international gag rule on abortion, healthcare aid is fine. And now we're being conditioned that a domestic one is okay too. It's just a long slip and a long row of us ceding to the right and the religious right here. So, and it's frustrating because, when you look at these things and if you really like dispassionately just read it, you realize that if this were any other healthcare issue, even some sort of other emotional or maybe controversial ones like mental health, for example, the conversation would not look anything like this, because this is specifically about women and people with uteruses. This is about control.
And just to be clear, so like in this opinion, right? So Rehnquist, fucking hate Rehnquist. Rehnquist wrote the majority opinion with White, Scalia, Kennedy, fucking Anthony Kennedy, and Souter, right?
Fucking Anthony Kennedy.
Yeah,
fucking
but in
Anthony
the dissenting
Kennedy.
Opinion, so Blackmun is writing this, and what is it? O'Connor fucking joins the dissenting opinion, right? And O'Connor again is a conservative justice. Yeah. She was a conservative justice, but and appointed by Reagan. But she, Justin Paul Stevens, another liberal justice, wrote that not a word in the statute. Title X statute authorizes HHS secretary to impose any restrictions on the dissemination of truthful information or professional advice by grant recipients, right? So recipients. So basically what right. Stevens is saying, nowhere in like this, this creation of HHS or the creation of Title X funding does it say, oh, we're allowed to restrict what people who get these grants, Title X grants, are allowed to say to their patients. That's not in the fucking creation of this thing. So this case is fucked up.
And again, just think about how ridiculous that is. You're going to tell, like, a non-medical professional is telling a medical profession what and how to tell their patients. Like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Under no other, that is such absolute bullshit. That's like writing a law or a statute or a rule that says medical doctors must talk about erection pills this way specifically or no way or the highway, get the fuck out. I mean, like, that's basically what
and
they're
another,
saying
like
here.
Another the reason this is so fucked up is that, like, so the recent crisis pregnancy center case, right? Basically, like, the Supreme Court, when it has a conservative majority, which it fucking has, it's always has been for like a long fucking time. Fuck. It sucks. But because of this conservative majority, they're allowed to say, oh yeah, crisis pregnancy centers, their free speech is being violated by this law that says you have to tell people who are going to crisis pregnancy centers that there may not be medical professionals on site. But Planned Parenthood's free speech is not being violated by this Title X rule, because fucking Kavanaugh is going to write that opinion. He's probably already written that opinion, and haven't read it. Right? He's probably already said this in the past, and so have other justices. That literally, Planned Parenthood doesn't have First Amendment rights, but crisis pregnancy centers do. Right? This idea that it's fucking bullshit. And the thing is, it's really hard to like talk about this because, again, I am not a lawyer. But the thing is that when you read like the history of the Supreme Court, it's fucking bullshit. A lot of it's fucking bullshit, right? And a lot of the way that laws are written is also bullshit. No one is innately thinking about whether or not this violates the First Amendment, because the head of Health and Human Services right now, Donald Trump, like HHS in general, doesn't give a fuck if this violates the First Amendment rights of doctors or Planned Parenthood or whatever, right? They don't care. Because they want to control women. That is their goal. Like you said it perfectly. It is about control. It literally even isn't about the fact that even if they stopped all abortion, because that's what the Hyde Amendment basically does. Even if they said, even if they found a way to make sure that there's no physical way that the government isn't paying for abortion, because they're not. They are not paying for abortion, just to be clear. But even if they like found a way to be like 100% sure, that's not enough for them, right? It's not enough because they want to completely outlaw abortion. But the thing they don't understand is you cannot outlaw abortion. It has been existing since before laws even existed about whether or not it was a crime or not, or whether or not it was illegal or not.
That's the other thing I always say when people talk about like, oh, because I was talking to somebody about, is there space in the Democratic Party for people and for women who are pro-life? And I'm like, first of all, it's not pro-life. It's anti-choice.
Yeah, and it's pro-birth.
Let's just get that right. Okay. Everyone calm down. And it's pro-birth, really. And I was like, but, you know, let's not argue semantics because, you know, you're saying whatever. And I was like, here's the thing. Outlawing abortions is not going to stop abortions. It's just going to kill women.
Yeah.
That's all that's going to happen. And ultimately, so when you say, that's why I say you're not pro-life, because it's just going to kill women. It's just going to kill people who need an abortion and can't get it or try to get it illegally. It's just going to hurt people. This isn't about support. This isn't about compassionate care or care of any kind. It's about control. Because really, think about it. If they really wanted to, and again, this is very conspiracy theory of me, and sometimes I feel myself slipping into like this alternate reality in which I am a conspiracy theorist with like a room full of string and like pictures and people. And like, I'm not saying that I don't have that. I'm just saying like, sometimes it's very clear to me that I'm losing it. But you know, if they really wanted to, there are ways that they could make abortion and these sort of issues even more difficult, right? There are ways to go about it. And I think strategically they don't, because they know that they don't have to. And that this is almost more effective than outlawing them outright, because this isn't saying it's illegal. It's saying, all right, it's legal. Go find one. Go ahead. It's going to be expensive. It's going to be out of state. You know, the one Planned Parenthood in an entire state now has to separate its facilities if it offers abortion. All right. Well, you're fuck out of luck. I don't know what to tell you. So this is more effective than just outlawing abortion. And that's what makes it so scary. And that's what makes it so dangerous, is because it's actually going to prevent more abortions than just making it illegal.
It is. Yeah. And I think, so like when somebody asks you if there's room for, or like anti-choice or whatever in the Democratic Party, and I'm just like, yeah, they fucking exist. And they're not really the best at like protecting women. Right. So like Tim Kaine and like Bob Casey, like, yeah, they're fine senators. Right. They vote like pretty liberally most of the fucking time, right? But when it comes to like certain judges that are up or certain ideas or whatever, they don't vote like pro-choice. They don't, right? Especially when it comes to the fact that like, so the way that Tim Kaine bills himself is that he is like personally pro-life because he's Catholic, but like outwardly he doesn't legislate on that.
Right.
But he sort of does. And the reason that even if he had a perfect fucking record, even if Bob Casey and him had a perfect fucking record, I would still be pissed, because what he thinks of it is that like, he fundamentally thinks that as a human being, as a man, he has a right to think about it. And I'm like, no, you fucking don't. You really don't. Unless like a woman comes up to you and says, can you tell me your opinion on my abortion? Unless like his wife comes up to him and is like, can you tell me your opinion on me getting birth control? He doesn't get to have a fucking opinion. I'm sorry. He really doesn't. Right. And the reason that sounds very like I'm a fucking woman busting your balls is because it is. The only people who should have an opinion on what
because
happens
it is.
To like my uterus, whether or not I get birth control or don't get birth control, terminate my pregnancy or have like 10, 15, 10 babies, is me and my doctor. I'm allowed to like, let's say one day I get married and I want to talk, because like there's another great TV show. Okay. And it's not a medical show. This is just about working moms. And one of these working moms has just had a baby, and she finds out like 3 months after having this baby that she's pregnant again. And she tells her husband, right? And like they go through the process of like planning for it and everything. And then finally they decide to terminate the pregnancy. And it's really hard for her husband. But the thing is, she allows him to be a part of the decision. But if she wanted to go to that abortion clinic, because she did, and do it alone without telling him, like, it's not great for their marriage. But like, she's allowed to fucking do that, because she has to live with that for the rest of her life, right?
Right.
So, yeah, that's basically what I'm saying, is like, it's the reason it shouldn't be in the Democratic Party platform, or we shouldn't accept people who are pro-birth, aka anti-choice, in the party, is because that fundamentally doesn't jive with the values that Democratic people have, which is it's your fucking body. Do whatever the fuck you want with it.
Exactly. And like I said, ultimately, it's just going to lead to more women being hurt and more people with uteruses being hurt and more trans people and more non-binary people. And it just, it snowballs, right? It just becomes this big fucking thing that it's like, it, and I, you know, we, I know you and I hate the term slippery slope, but it does. It's sort of like, oh, well, I mean, yeah, I guess, like, you can kind of, like, legislate an abortion. It's fine. We're not going to, like, deal with it. It's fine. And then it's like, oh, you know, like, trans rights. Like, who fucking cares? You know, like, oh, like, you know, like, you know, racial equality. Like, who fucking cares? I mean, it just, it kind of goes and goes and goes and goes, you know?
Like, we cannot, we literally gave them a mile with so many other things, right? Like, the Hyde Amendment, this Sullivan case. Any time that we lose the Senate and we get another conservative justice in the Supreme Court or another justice on a district court or whatever, we like are giving them so many inches to literally just fuck with their lives. And so like when it comes up to this trans service ban, or when it comes up to the fact that like gay couples can't adopt babies from this one place, like that's just like giving them more. And so we have to be really loud about the fact that like it's unacceptable, especially this time.
And I like how you put that. If it sounds like I'm a feminist coming, like a ball-busting feminist, it's because I am. Thank you for noticing. I am absolutely that ball-busting feminist that your father warned you about, boy.
It's just
so.
What I am. I accept it proudly. Like, when I say men are trash, like, I mean it.
Oh my gosh, wait. This is actually not related, but we are going to talk about it. One of the members in our Dickwad's group on Facebook is in another Facebook group that I'm in, and she told a story, and I'm going to keep it anonymous because I didn't talk to her about using her story, but she was on Kamala Harris's Facebook page, and there was someone, a man, calling Kamala Harris a cunt, and so she reported it to Facebook, and Facebook came back, you know, saying like this is unacceptable, and Facebook came back saying this does not violate our community standards. No action has been taken. So I would just like to put out there in the ether that I said men are trash and got banned from Facebook for 3 days, and somebody on the internet, a man on the internet, calls Kamala Harris a cunt. Like, that's not general. That's not like women are cunts. That's Kamala Harris is a cunt, and no action was taken against him. So just want to put that out there. So if anyone ever asks me, is there a place for anti-choicers in the Democratic Party, I'm just going to tell them that anecdote. And if they don't understand it, then I'm going to be like, well, you never will.
Anti-choicers in the Democratic Party, anti-choice in general, is just putting women at a second-class level. It's allowing for the conditioning, this idea that abortion care, birth control, or whatever is women's care, women's issues, whatever, is like second class. And so fuck you. No.
Right.
It's unacceptable. Yeah.
Okay, so sort of relatedly to women being second-class citizens is I was talking to a friend of mine, and one of my pet peeves, and I was telling him that this is one of my pet peeves, is when kids say, I was in mommy's tummy, referring to when, you know, their mom was pregnant. And for my kid, I said, no, tummies are for burritos, uteruses are for babies. And so he says, which is true, he says, oh, okay, so when I was in mommy's uterus, and I was like, exactly. And so he, you know, when he talks about it, that's how he talks about it. And my friend was like, wait, what? Like, why? And I'm like, well, because babies don't go in stomachs. Like, they go in the uterus. And he was like, well, I mean, tummy is just sort of short for that whole like area. I'm like, no, it's not short for stomach. If he had said when I was in mommy's abdomen, I would have given it to him. Like, all right, fine. But, you know. And he was like, oh, well, that's like kind of woke of you. And I'm like, not really. All I did was tell him the proper body part. Like, I told him the name of a body part. Like, it's to me, a uterus is like a stomach in that it's an internal organ with a name that has a function. Right. This isn't. But we're so conditioned as a society to view, you know, women's and assigned female at birth, you know, people's like internal organs as different and second class, that we don't even say them. We don't even say uterus. We, you know, we say tummy, you know, or stomach, right? And it's like, we haven't even given name to these body parts. And I was like, what's woke is that I told my four-year-old that not all women have uteruses and some men have uteruses and some people are neither men nor women. That, I will give you, is a little woke. But me telling him that babies are grown in uteruses and not stomachs is not woke. It's just basic anatomy.
This Title X one thing is just like, it's just standing in for all of the bullshit that society throws at women when it comes to their healthcare. And it's very frustrating.
Right. And the fact that we can't even properly name women's body parts.
How is that politically?
Really, like, what this Title X funding is about in a larger sense is that we've subjugated it to like a second class citizen.
Yeah.
And then we're
saying the word uterus is like politically correct now. And I'm like, no, it's just the fucking like correct word. Like, oh my God.
All right, Varsha. So I do want to get to the Michael Cohen testimony that happened in Congress yesterday, Wednesday, because we're recording on a Thursday. So can you tell us kind of what happened there?
Yeah. So basically, Cohen offered a shit ton of new things about Robert Mueller and like Russia, basically. So like he said, like, one, he said that like Trump's like personal lawyer, Jay Sekulow, had reviewed and like edited Cohen's false testimony about Trump Tower Moscow. He also said that he heard that Roger Stone, like, tell Trump on speakerphone that WikiLeaks' Julian Assange would release emails about hurting Hillary Clinton's campaign. He also said that during the campaign, John Jr. tells his dad that he set up a meeting, and he thinks that might be the infamous June meeting with the Russian lawyer, right? He also like denied a lot of stuff. Like he denied the stuff that he went to Prague because he didn't go to Prague. He also denied that he didn't that Trump didn't tell me to lie to Congress because that's not how he operates. But he also like talked about how like Trump like talks in. He also said that like Trump talks in code basically, and that like that's how all of this works. And so it was just like a lot of bullshit. But like the intel, the good stuff about it was that like so. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she had really fucking amazing questioning of Cohen. So basically she asked him like, she asked him specifically like, is Trump like, what do you do? Like, is Trump like deflating the value of an asset and then like putting it like, you know, like basically she asked about Trump's tax returns, right? And so she basically said, would it be helpful for the committee to obtain federal and state tax returns from the president and his company to address that discrepancy of basically how Donald Trump is messing with the value of his assets, right? And Cohen said, yeah, that would be helpful. And so this opens the door for the for Congress to request Trump's tax returns because it's been sort of a fight. Because even though Congress can do it, one, we have Democrats controlling the House, two, Congress is allowed to do it. It's like, it's sort of like politically risky, right? And you have to jump through some hoops to get it. And so AOC's questioning basically like opened the door for get that, right? Because so like the Tax Policy Center basically explained that like the House committees can request tax information from the IRS, but it required a resolution from the House of Representatives. And then the House Oversight Committee can do it themselves, but it's like a little bit complicated. And so Ocasio-Cortez basically laid the groundwork to let that resolution probably pass. I mean, obviously without Republican support, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of really great moments and a lot of really amazing things said. I mean, Ayanna Pressley also had amazing questions, and Rashida Tlaib had amazing questions. And it was at the very end, and this was sort of a little bit of drama, where she said that using women of color as a prop is racist. And then Mark Meadows lost his fucking mind.
Yeah, because he brought someone African-American who supports the president.
Right.
To the hearing.
Exactly. And so he lost his mind and demanded that it be taken off the record and gets into it with her. And she's just like cool as a cucumber. Like, I wasn't talking about you, but like, who has a guilty conscience, Mark Meadows? Little son of a bitch. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like in tears. Like he's like almost about to like fucking cry because somebody called him a racist. Instead of crying about the fact that, oh shit, I might have done something racist. Like he's literally like more pissed about the word racist than being a racist. And also like it came out today that like Jim Jordan and like Meadows, like they were both like birthers during Obama's presidency, and they're just like, oh, I wasn't being racist. That's just like, you know, that was like, I was running for re-election. Like, that's, I think, what one of them said. And I was like, fuck you. But also, like Cohen admitted that he was lying to Congress in 2017 about like the Trump Tower in Moscow. He also like, he basically said like the Trump Tower in Moscow, like discussion of that project went on at least until June of 2016, right? And he also basically made the point that like Trump lies so much during the campaign and lied so much still is because like he lies so much during the campaign because he didn't think he was going to win. He literally just wanted this for like the business result of like running for president, right? He literally didn't think he was going
to
win.
Well, yeah, they tried launching like Trump TV during his campaign, which is obviously what he really wanted was to create a new news network. But here's the thing. What I think was also super interesting about this Cohen testimony, even outside of like what he said and what was talked about and even the questions and the people asking them, is I found super interesting that everyone kept trying to shame him for being a shady ass motherfucker.
Yeah.
And which isn't going to work because Cohen, his whole thing, he was like, hello, I was hired by Trump specifically to be shady. A shady ass motherfucker. Like, you can't shame me for this. Like, yes, I have questionable ethics and morals. I'm admitting it. Like, you telling me I have questionable ethics and morals in a way to like, you know, make me feel bad or make me like trip up somehow. I mean, I do, like, I say this a lot, but I love to say it. Like, if you're going to be a shitty person, like own it and be the best shitty person you can be. And I have to say, Michael Cohen's a lot of things, but he is owning it and he is being the best shitty person that he possibly can be.
And like, it's not like I like forgive the guy or like the guy now. No. I'm just saying that like, it's interesting that everyone on the Republican side of the House Oversight Committee was like, you have a credibility problem because you're a liar and a cheat. And like, they literally brought a poster that said liar, liar, pants on fire.
Seriously. It's a nice juvenile, like middle school touch, in my opinion.
Literally. And I was just like, how does that argument work? Because if he's a liar, that means he was lying for Donald Trump. Like, what are you like? It makes no sense that he's only lying about the crimes that Trump committed, but everything else is like true. Like, I was just like, what the fuck, right? And also, like, a bunch of people are like calling him a rat, like at CPAC and stuff like that. And I'm just like, have you watched a fucking mob movie? Because the rat is usually telling the truth, idiots.
Right. Like, well, and so here's the other thing. If you think about this, this kind of blew, I was thinking about this and it's like, okay, so basically the House Republicans like thesis here is that Cohen is lying about Trump being guilty. Mm-hmm. And we know that because he was originally lying about Trump being innocent. like think your way out of that one, motherfuckers. Like, seriously.
Yeah. It's so bananas. It was just like, that's what frustrated me more, is that like a lot of the Democratic questioning was really good and we got a lot of new information. And even if we didn't get any new information, we got a lot of solid shit in the record. Right. And it's just good.
Exactly. A lot of this was about getting it on the record, not about like revelations.
And so like
here,
we got a lot of shit on the record and we basically got a little bit more of the picture. Right. Basically, we were building a giant fucking puzzle. And like Cohen was like a really a good piece that we found.
Right.
And it's fascinating, right?
I think a lot of people wanted a nail in the coffin and we were never going to get it. Like, that was never going to be what this was. This was always going to be a shifty, shady little motherfucker answering shifty, shady motherfucker questions from Republicans and looking uncomfortable as a bunch of women of color pin him to the fucking wall. That's always what this was going to be. And like, they came through on that.
Yeah. And also like at this point, and this is like, this is sort of paraphrasing a Chrissy Teigen tweet, but at this point, like, nothing is going to get Donald Trump. Like, nothing is going to get him. And it's hard to say that, but it's true. And so what I want out of all of this Russia investigation, all this stuff, is just the fucking truth. Because what's going to get Trump is us winning in 2020.
Exactly.
That's what we should be focusing on, right? And that's what we are focusing on. And this stuff is important because if we find out the truth about this, it's probably going to reveal that Donald Trump is just super corrupt and taking money while being president, right? And has just made super shady shit. He's just done super shady shit, right? And same thing when it comes to Ivanka and Jared and Don Jr. and like Manafort and all these other criminals in this crime family. We just need to know that they've committed crimes. And if it doesn't mean that like it's not, if it doesn't lead to Donald Trump's impeachment, fine. We'll beat him in 2020.
Donald Trump is not getting impeached. I think we all just need to come to that fact. I think actually at this point it would be, we as Democrats, it is not strategic to impeach Donald Trump anymore. Because if we impeach Donald Trump, if we're successful, which we won't be, but if for some ridiculous reason we were, he was impeached, then we've got Mike Pence. And I think going up against Mike Pence is going to be a lot harder than going up against Trump in 2020.
Yeah, even though Mike Pence has like the charisma of like a bland piece of toast, and that's being nice.
That was being very generous. I was going to say like a used tampon, but all right.
Yeah, like even though he has the charisma of like a literal used tampon, like it's like there is like always a risk that he finds a way to clean up all the bullshit Trump has pulled in the last couple of years, but still keep all the horrible things like this bad Title X funding stuff and repealing Obamacare and all this other crap, right? There is a chance he is a harder candidate to beat than Donald Trump. But even if he wasn't, it's still like, even if like we find a way to succeed to impeach Donald Trump, like in the House, he's not going to get convicted because the Senate is not going to do that because Lindsey Graham is like so far up like Donald Trump's like ass. Like it's just like every single Republican senator doesn't give a fuck, right? Like this emergency declaration, right? It took us so long to get enough senators to maybe vote that the emergency declaration is a bad idea. But we do know that there aren't enough senators to overturn the veto when Donald Trump vetoes that resolution that this emergency declaration is terminated, right? So like if we know that, if we know that we can't get 67 Republican senators to vote for something that is literally just saying that Donald Trump is making an unconstitutional mistake, like if we can't get enough Republican votes for that, we're not going to be able to impeach him, right? So like what I got from this testimony is that Donald Trump is super fucking corrupt, has done super shady shit, and I am happy that Robert Mueller will eventually maybe release a report about all this shady shit that Donald Trump has done. And that's basically what I got, is that we learned more about the fact that through this testimony, there was some weird shit going on with Russia. At least some people, maybe it wasn't Donald Trump himself, maybe it was just Manafort, maybe it was just Roger Stone, some people were involved with WikiLeaks. And we already knew a lot about that, but this sort of solidified the fact that Michael Cohen, even he had suspicions. And Michael Cohen isn't super bright. Because he's also committed a lot of stupid crimes on his own. He's committed a lot of bananas crimes on his own, right? So, yeah. That's what I got from the Michael Cohen testimony. I also got the fact that, like, AOC, Ayanna Pressley, Rashida Tlaib, and all these other women of color were fucking badass at questioning. Like, it was so good. It was a little, like, frustrating to see people, like, journalists on Twitter being like, oh, credit where credit is due. AOC is really good at questioning. And I'm like, yeah, she's been in a lot of hearings before this. Like, if you, like, watched her for, like, the previous hearing she's been in, she's really good at this, right? And I think that's what's so frustrating about women of color, like, finally getting into office is that they're still
shocked.
Yeah, people are so shocked and they're still discounting their skills. And I'm like, fuck you, assholes. They won an election.
Right, it's this idea that they were only elected. They were only elected because of who they are.
Yes.
And their abilities.
And also, this happens on the Republican side, like the far right, as well as like people who are more like right wing or whatever. They discount AOC, I think, because she's super pretty. Like,
yeah.
I think they think
oh, yeah.
that because she's pretty, she can't be
oh,
smart.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck.
So is Ayanna Pressley and
yeah.
so is Rashida Tlaib. And I think that is part of it.
Yeah, this idea that, oh, they look nice. This means that they can't, like the whole like Elle Woods defense, basically. Like,
yeah.
oh, Elle Woods
yeah,
can't
yeah, yeah.
be a lawyer. And it's like, I never, I know that existed because like this has happened even on the left. Like, so like Obama, when Kamala Harris was running for AG or something, right? Obama basically
yeah.
commented that she's like the hottest AG in the country. And I'm
yeah.
like, Barack Obama, fuck you, asshole. Like, what the fuck?
Fuck you,
she,
sit down.
She's a badass
Take
lawyer.
A fucking-
like,
Yeah, exactly. Like, take a fucking seat, man.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that Obama, like, discounts Kamala Harris's skills, but it's just, like, daily language like that. And I think it's so evident in the way that people talk about AOC, right? And it's so evident, and it's, like, so frustrating. Because I'm like, AOC, Ayanna Pressley, and Tlaib, and Ilhan Omar, and all these people were not just elected because, one, they're women or people of color. They were
right.
elected, like, on top of all of that, they were also elected because they had amazing policy ideas and they
exactly.
want to represent their state, right? Yeah. So that was the Cohen testimony. It was just like, it was also like real eye-opening to, I sort of looked at some right-wing media and like what they were sort of talking about. And they
mm-hmm.
basically thought like the Republicans did a good job. And
yeah.
that kind of disconnect is so scary. So that was a scary result of this Cohen testimony, is that we have a media environment where people can choose who they listen to, and who they listen to will tell them what they want, which is this was a disaster for Democrats and it was a good thing for Donald Trump. And I'm like, that's bananas.
These kind of discussions I find are actually the thing I like best about like our Facebook group and like on Twitter, which is where we do a lot of discussion with like our listeners. So we're actually talking a lot about this on the Facebook group. So if you want to join us, go to facebook.com/group/dickwadsbegone. And we've been having some really interesting, nuanced, and also hilarious and making fun of people conversations. So I'm just going to like throw that little plug out there, because I think that this is one of those conversations where the more people you have, the better it is.
Yeah.
Okay, Varsha, last but not least, what is something that Hellions can do after they listen to the show? So an action item.
Since we spent so long talking about Planned Parenthood and Title X funding, you should probably, the one thing you should do is donate to Planned Parenthood.
Please,
if you can,
please
make it a monthly donation, because I feel like we need to donate to it, not just because Donald Trump is president, but also after, right? Because even after Donald Trump leaves, we still have 5 conservative members in the Supreme Court. We still have asshole Republican senators and House members. And
we still have Justice Buttface.
Yeah, we still have Justice Buttface. We still have governors and state representatives across the country that want to restrict Roe v. Wade and restrict abortion and restrict women's rights in general when it comes to healthcare. So donate to Planned Parenthood. Also, if you feel like it, donate to the National Network of Abortion Funds, because eventually there is a chance that like Roe v. Wade is totally gone or basically gutted, and we need to support organizations that are getting women the care they need, and abortion is healthcare.
Yes. Abortion care is healthcare. Say it until everybody you know believes it. So, All right. I think that is it for us. Varsha, this was a great conversation. I feel very pumped right now.
Me too. It was fun.
Yeah. Feels great. So,
even though we're talking about sad stuff, it was fun.
All right, Hellions, thank you so much for listening. We love having these discussions with you every week. So have a great week. Varsha and I will be back here next week. Have a great week. In the meantime, raise some hell and take good care of yourself and the people around you, because there's so much going on. It can be so daunting, but you know, take care of yourself and then jump back in and fight.
Hellbent Podcast is a production of Hellbent Media. It is produced by me, Devin Handy,
and Varsha Venkata Subramanian.
We get editing help from Andrew Walsh. And we, of course, take input from co-creator Sarah Lerner.
You can follow us on social media at Hellbent Pod on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
And you can join our Facebook group, Dickwadsbegone, at facebook.com/groups/dickwadsbegone.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Varsha_Venkat.
And you can follow me at Devin Handy. Also, remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just the rules of feminism.
Tune in every Monday and Thursday for an intersectional feminist look and the centering of women's voices and people of color. We look at current events, public policy, and upcoming elections to give you the most incisive look into stories that don't get covered elsewhere. Thank you.